Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Ponco Chicken. The new Atlanta restaurant thrives off of a unique spin on Japanese and Western cuisine and is already racking up the awards, winning best-selling taste in the Taste of Atlanta Awards both in 2017 and 2018. So if you're in the Metro Atlanta area and are wanting to try something new and good and delicious, go to Ponco Chicken today and tell them that I sent you over. You'll be glad you did, I promise. Ponco Chicken, where eats meets West.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Welcome back to a Wednesday night edition. Oh, excuse me. Already coughing. Very professional. No cough button. I'm just jumping right in. We're going to move past it. Welcome to the Chase Thomas Podcast. I am now joined by friend of the pod, one of my favorite NFL writers. He's here all the time. It's Austin Gale of ProFootballFocus.com. Austin, good evening. Happy 2019.
Oh, thanks, man. Hoping to kick it off right.
Yeah, I'm excited. You went back to Oakland. You got to go see, you were in on the Mike Mayock stuff before anybody else. You were hanging out at the Oakland facility. You were ahead of the curve, right?
I wish. If I was ahead of the curve, it would have been nice. But Mike Mayock news is interesting. I think not surprised in the slightest. I mean, if you're surprised by any John Gruden move at this point, you're just not paying attention. I think with the move overall, I don't know if it changes much. I think adding someone that knows the draft and is a great talent evaluator is very, very good thing to do. But when John Gruden has the final say, he has the final say. So I don't think a lot of things are going to be changing from a decision-making standpoint. I think it's just a face to put in the GM room, wherever that is in Oakland facilities. But the guy who's making the calls is still John Gruden. It's going to be for the next 9-plus years if he lasts the whole contract.
It's weird because John Gruden, I mean, the Raiders were better down the stretch, and I am still kind of reeling from going through some DVOA stuff on Football Outsiders this morning, like just how much worse the Cardinals were than everybody else in football this year. And you would, I think most people just assume it was the Raiders, but I mean, they played better down the stretch. Some guys came on. Like, one of their biggest issues is like one of their best pressure guys can't bring down people. And it drives Paul Gunther insane. Like, his quotes about, was it Arden Key, who just can't seem to actually bring anyone down. He just gets his hands on everybody all the time, and he just never finds a way to bring them down. Like, there are some bright spots down the stretch, and I mean, I'm still pretty dubious about the Raiders' future with John Gruden, but I do think if you're a Raiders fan, not getting Bruce Allen away from Washington's a huge win, right? Like, making him stay with his brother in D.C. It seemed like that was my bet. Like, that's what I was expecting, is, like, them just offering a grandfather, like, just an insane offer Bruce Allen can't refuse to reunite with John Gruden and Mark Davis in Oakland. Like, that was my assumption, where they were going to go. And Mayock seems like it kind of came out of nowhere, but at least it's intriguing, right? Like, the John Gruden stuff's kind of terrifying. Like you said, he'll still have final say, but at least Mayock, I like listening to him talk about the draft and everything else. So I mean, he doesn't like orangutans, which is a little suspect, because who doesn't like a good orangutan popping up on TV? But yeah, I guess that's where I'm at with it. It's like, it's not Bruce Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if it's anything, it puts him on the front runners list for Hard Knocks this offseason. I think they got a lot of TV personalities, a weird, you know, franchise that we don't even know where they're playing next year. My bet, and I think this is a dark horse bet, and I'm going to stick to it, is that they go to London. I think Roger Goodell is going to cut Mark Davis a big check to play all his home games in London, to kind of use it as a test to see what kind of following they get. Would they fill more seats than StubHub Center for the Los Angeles Chargers? I think that Roger Goodell sees that as an opportunity and experiment. He's willing to invest in. And you know what Mark Davis is looking for? Money, anywhere he can get it. He's not going to get it playing in, you know, AT&T Park or going to San Diego or starting at UNLV. He's going to get it by taking his team to London. Would the players like it? No. Would the coaches like it? No. But would Mark Davis make more money? Absolutely. Obviously, it's still a dark horse, and that would involve a lot of crazy things, like where do the players live at that point? But I don't see it as far-fetched as some others do.
I could see, like, the dark horse, like, where they play, and this seems like it's not being talked about enough, is, like, the Raiders literally don't have a home next year right now. Mexico City, if that field did not, like, if it didn't just unfold the way it did. Who was it? The Rams and someone else. Who was in that Monday Night Football game that got canceled or got moved because
it was Rams.
Who were the Rams playing? Chiefs, right. And it turned out to be the best move of all time, because that was probably the best regular season game of the year. And we don't know if that happens, if that game is played on that turf in Mexico City. But that seems like the best play to me. How wild would that be? Like, let's just put the Raiders in Mexico City for a season.
I like it for the fan base, and I think there is a significant draw for just knowing how many Raiders fans are in Mexico. And when they've gone there in the past, things have gone well. But, you know, what hasn't gone well is, one, the field quality, and also air quality. There was a big, you know, after the Raiders played there, I think they played the Patriots there, not last year, but the year before. There was a lot of players were saying the air quality was very, very bad. It made it very hard to breathe, and a lot of players came out of that not feeling as good as they did when they went into it. And I think that part of it makes it kind of suspect in terms of making it a long-term home, especially going down to Mexico with where the United States is in Mexico right now. I don't know. I see London being a bigger opportunity, and also for the NFL to kind of really evaluate London's NFL fan base and what it would be like to have an expansion team there and go from the NFL to, you know, whatever, the World Football League.
Yeah, I don't know. The London stuff, do you think it's ever going to happen? Do you think we'll eventually have a team in London?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, what always drives those kind of bigger decisions is money. And I think if London has a following that would produce a significant revenue stream for the NFL and Roger Goodell, they're going to pull the trigger. It doesn't matter about feel or if it's possible, or, you know, would teams like it, would players like it? It doesn't matter. Whoever's going to make, you know, the top down is going to make money, they're going to pull the trigger on it. I think it would be very hard for that team to kind of travel to America all the time and make those, you know, make those plays. But I think in the long run, if the NFL sees it as a profitable decision, I think they will move that way. And what better way to find out than to kind of put a team there for a year in an opportunity that you really won't get for the foreseeable future, and a team not having a home for next season. The decision's made in February, so you'll see what, you know, what has to happen here in the next few months.
What would you bet on?
I think I'm betting on London. I think they're gonna, whether
it's not just you want it there, but you actually think that's where it's gonna go. They're gonna go to London for a year.
I don't want it in London. I think the best place for it to go would be to go to Nevada, try and see if you can get a deal with UNLV.
Or just stay in Oakland for another year. Is that, like, off the table? Can they not do that under any circumstances?
The lawsuit, and then also Oakland. I mean, apparently Mark Davis has withdrawn his offer to rent out the space for next year. I think those two sides have soured so much that he is ruling out Oakland as an option. So he's looked at AT&T Park. He's looked at sharing the stadium in Santa Clara. It's difficult. You know, he's looked at those local options, but seeing London come up on the rumor mill doesn't surprise me in the slightest for what Mark Davis is looking to do. I think the best decision, go to UNLV, try and find a place you can play in Nevada to build that fan base up before you go to Las Vegas.
The Rams kind of deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what anyone would do in this situation, go to the place you're moving to so you can start to build up a fan base before the stadium is built. However, that hasn't been the leading option. Instead, you've seen London pop up more. You've seen San Francisco pop up more, AT&T Park. But do the Raiders really want to play in a baseball stadium again? I don't know. And also, you have the San Francisco 49ers and Oakland Raiders. Neither of them play in either of those cities. Niners play in Santa Clara, and the Raiders play in San Francisco. It's an interesting situation for fans and how to really build the brand. I think there's a lot of ways they can go. Where I want them to go, Nevada, of course, I think that's where they'd be the most successful long-term. Where I think they're going to go, I think they're going to pull the trigger on London.
Man, I'm pulling for Mexico City. Like, I think when you talk about the air quality and everything else, I think if you're a Raiders fan or you're John Gruden or you're now Mike Mayock and you're looking at how can we win games in 2019 with the kind of roster issues, what if we played a game where, like, opposing teams, like, because they can get used to the poor air quality. It could be like a Denver Nuggets type deal where they can just play to their strengths, that use that home field advantage of, like, just keep the turf really shitty. Have to, like, make traveling just a huge pain in the ass for other teams.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it would be like the coolest Seattle home field advantage scenario of all time. Like, imagine the Raiders going 8-0 at home in Mexico City next year just because it's like the air is awful. Colton Miller becomes like a all pro left tackle because of it, and everything's great. That's what I would do.
No team looks the same when they travel to Mexico City. They just play all the best, but they just don't bring their best, and they go down in the air quality bad. I could see it. I mean,
quarterbacks just, like, refuse to go. They're like, I can't do it. Like, Lamar Jackson just says, I can't handle that. Like, he's just, no, I run the ball too much. There's no way I make it through, and Joe Flacco has to play or something, or Robert Griffin has to step in. I'm telling you, man, I think 8-0 in Mexico City is a possibility for Oakland next year.
Like I said, I mean, if you're surprised with the decisions being made in Oakland anymore, I think you're just, you know, you're uneducated on the situation. I think they're willing to do anything and everything right now, whether it be the right decision or the well-thought decision. I think they'll do anything. And I think Mexico City is a possibility. They're going to look into it and try and do it.
Is Derek Carr still a Raider next year?
Yes, I think so. But I do think the possibility of him going away is high. But I do think in the end, he ends up staying on the roster. Will he be traded if John Gruden's offered something like a first and a second? I think John Gruden pulls that trigger. I don't think he has any alliance with Derek Carr. He wants to restart at the position. I think he's looking at Ryan Tannehill, a guy he likes that possibly he thinks is an upgrade, even though it's vastly not a very bad decision to go in that direction. Yeah. But you really don't know. I mean, John Gruden says all this stuff to the media. You know, a couple days before Amari Cooper was traded, he said he's moving and being the focal point of the offense. You say you look at Khalil Mack. He goes into the Oakland, you know, big bar called Ricky's Sports Bar, like a dedicated Raiders bar in Oakland for as long as I can remember. Stands up on the table and says, "Khalil Mack is staying with us in Oakland. We're going to do everything we can." Trades him like 2 months later. You don't know what he says, because he always talks about how much he loves Derek Carr and he wants to win with Derek Carr. I'm telling you, you know, the right.
I think he changes his mind a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. I mean, he's mentioned that at times in conferences, press conferences, where he says, everything changes so fast in the NFL. Like, you think one thing, and then someone calls you, and, now you got to make a different decision. You can't keep your loyalty so thick to a point where, you're not willing to do anything, even at the right price. But I think he could easily change his mind on Derek Carr. But I think in the long run, he's not going to get the deal he's looking for Derek Carr. And he's going to stick with him for at least another year, and maybe bring in a quarterback on day two that he can groom behind Derek Carr, because the backup situation isn't great either. We'll see. I think Derek Carr ends up staying by default because no team gives him the right price that he's looking for. But I do think if a team on the off chance does call him with a first and maybe a second, like the Giants, the Jags, maybe
the
Miami.
Giants make the most sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think he pulls the trigger on that trade.
The Giants are kind of screwed because, I mean, Sam and Steve talked about this in the podcast on Monday on the PFF Pro Football podcast that everybody should listen to if they have not already. But I agree with this point that even though Saquon Barkley was better than expected and was kind of like Alvin Kamara at his peak this year, like maybe even a little bit better at times, and he's like an all-world talent, everything else, but it's still, they went, what, 5-11? There's only so much a running back can still change when you have a quarterback like Eli and just him grading out the way he did, like 60-whatever. He's just still not good, and he's not good enough, and you can put OBJ, you can put Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, all of this talent. You can even sign Nate Solder. If your quarterback is just that bad, it just doesn't matter. And them not taking Darnold or Rosen or Lamar, or I'm still not a Josh Allen believer, but any of those guys, when they did, because like they talked about, you never know if a Justin Herbert's going to stay in school the next year. And then what do you do? The best quarterback prospect in this draft has said, no, do you roll the dice on Will Greer, who I think is probably now the best quarterback option in this draft? I still like Will Greer a lot, but we'll see. I don't know if he's, I don't think he has the upside of Sam Darnold or Lamar Jackson or Josh Rosen, but I think maybe he could be close. Maybe Josh Rosen. I could see Josh Rosen, but ultimately they were playing the long game of like, well, we'll get Saquon now, and then the rookie quarterback we do take down the line, we'll have all these weapons, so his transition to the NFL game will be easier because we filled out the rest of this roster around him. The problem with that is you it's just never that clean. It's never that easy to just find that kind of quarterback at the right time, and you have to throw a lot of darts at the dartboard, and you have to take that chance when you have the number two pick, and that's the highest pick you've had since like 1981 or whatever it is. You have to pull the trigger on a quarterback, regardless of what you saw on tape with Eli and everything else. Like, you just, it's the most valuable position in football, and you have to take a quarterback. They fucked up, and this is something that I don't know if Dave Gettleman will ever admit, as hilarious as he is in press conferences. I think ultimately this is a team that messed up in a bad way here, because are you going Drew Lock? What are you doing? Are you going to do this another year of Eli and just this bad? I don't know how you get around it. So at that point, you're like, well, would you give up a first instead of using it? Instead of reaching on Drew Lock, do you give up a first round pick for Derek Carr? I think if you're the Giants, because you do have so much talent offensively now, that you probably, I would do it, especially with Pat Shurmur running the show and having an offensive-minded coach, and you could just see it, right? You could see a quick turnaround with Derek Carr where they could compete. I mean, the Eagles just made the playoffs, and it didn't feel like they should. The Redskins were winning the division for most of the year. Like, the NFC East is winnable. And I don't know. I could see Gettleman reaching. I can see them doing all of that. And I think if I'm a Giants fan, I'd rather just have Derek Carr and the potential there than seeing what Will Greer and Drew Lock put out there. Am I crazy?
No, not at all. I think it's not crazy. You're right. And you look back to what you said. You said it's not easy to get a quarterback, you know, a quarterback that's good in the first round. I'd argue that's the hardest thing to do in the NFL. The hardest thing to do in the NFL is to draft a QB that's good. It is the most difficult one. You have to be lucky enough that you're bad enough to get a high draft pick, to be in a situation where you can get one of the top QBs in the draft. Two, they have to pan out. So many variables factor into how a quarterback develops from college level to the NFL level. You look at guys like Mitch Trubisky going from UNC. A lot of people liked him. The Bears traded up from number three to number two to get him because they valued him, and he's still struggling to come out of the gate. You look at Patrick Mahomes. He's traded the house to go up to top 10 and get him because they thought he was valuable, and he's panned out. Obviously, talent evaluation is still key in that, but you see time and time again the consensus number one and number two QB don't work. Injuries, they can't pick up the system. It doesn't work. They don't have the right talent. They end up moving on from him. Coaching staffs change. It's so hard to find a QB. And that's why when you're in a position to get a good one, a really good one in a deep QB class at number two overall, you have to do it. You can't afford it, especially if your other option is to go after a running back. A running back is the least valuable position in football. If I was a GM in the NFL, I said this the other day in the office, I don't think I'd ever have a running back on my roster that wasn't on a rookie contract. It makes no sense to sign any running back at $4 million plus a year when you can get a replaceable position in the draft or even undrafted. Going back to that quarterback, and you look in the Giants, I think if you don't like the guys in this class, if you don't want to take a Drew Lock, a Dwayne Haskins if he comes out, or Will Greer high in the draft, do make a push for Derek Carr. If you like Derek Carr more than anybody in this class, he's still young. You can get him for a first rounder, probably, if you give Gruden the right call. And then next thing you know, you're able to compete in an NFC East, like you said, is wide open. The Eagles don't have a firm hold on it. Dak and the Cowboys don't have a firm hold on it. And Josh Johnson of the San Diego Fleet definitely doesn't have a hold on it from Washington Redskins. I think you can make a push in the NFC East with the right QB. And if you like Derek Carr more than these other guys, which I think a lot of teams would, then I think you pull the trigger if you can compete next year.
Yeah, and it should be interesting to see what they do. I'm intrigued because that team kind of, they had a good second half, the kind of second half you're looking for if you're a Giants fan, that like it's trending up. Pat Shurmur seems like the right fit there. But I don't know. How would you rank, I wrote about this today, how would you rank the available head coaching jobs right now in the NFL? Because Daniel Jeremiah, I respect a lot, I love him and Bucky on Move the Sticks, he had Arizona in the top four, and I almost fell out of my chair. I don't understand how that's possible. I don't know. Like, I outlined it in my piece I wrote that you can check out on ChaseThomasPodcast.com, but I think that's the worst job in football by far. Like, that roster, the turnover they've had in the last 2 years from when they were competing for a Super Bowl. It's easy to forget that this Cardinals team with Carson Palmer and Calais Campbell and Tyrann Mathieu and everybody else just a few years ago were getting preseason Super Bowl love. That was the thing that was happening. And everything's changed. And that NFC West, it's a bloodbath right now. I don't see the Rams going anywhere anytime soon. You have to deal with Shanahan, Sean McVay, and Pete Carroll 6 times a season. Why would you want that? Why would you want to go into a situation where you're like, Josh Rosen regressed as the season went along? It's the worst offensive line in football. Like, Vikings fans are even probably like, at least we don't have the Cardinals offensive line where they're starting Andre Smith and a bunch of other cast-offs like Justin Pugh and just... It's amazing what they were trotting out of the offensive line. And that, I think they gave up like 200 and something pressures this season. And the Bears had the best offensive line in that regard, because I think there's like 107 or something like that total pressures given up. Like, it's an awful job. I don't know why, unless I'm getting like a 10-year contract like John Gruden and full control. Like, McCarthy is like, I'm only taking this if I know I'm getting 5 years at minimum. Because Steve Wilkes got fired basically because he came in at the wrong time. Like, the offense being as bad as it was does fall on him because of the approach that they had and just how much they've invested in that group with Josh Rosen and David Johnson and everything, and Christian Kirk, that for Kirk to be that bad, Rosen to be that bad, you just can't. In today's NFL, you just can't do that. And he got kind of... it's so tough, but he got fired for 1 year because that roster was so bad. No one's winning with that roster this year. Like, they were going to be bad no matter what. And then you don't know what's going to happen with Steve Keim. You don't know, like, he's on, like, this is coach number three. What if he gets, like, there are just so many red flags with this Cardinals job that I was floored. Am I crazy for thinking that is clearly the worst job in football right now?
No, not at all. I think I wouldn't touch Arizona with a 10-foot pole if I was a young and up-and-coming coach. That you're going somewhere where even in 2 or 3 years, it's going to be very hard to win in that division. There's a lot of good talent from coaching side and other players in the NFC West that you're going to see the Seahawks, you know, even maybe the Niners if Jimmy Garoppolo can bounce back, and the Rams be good for a very long time, at least next 3 to 5 years. And you're going to have to deal with that in addition to, like you said, worst offensive line in football. You know, the defense is regressing and has older players, not a lot of young talent that you can get excited about. And a running back that David Johnson really hasn't been able to come back to form. I think you can blame that on the offensive line. I still think he's talented. But at the same time, you know, that his motor's running too. And I think there's not a lot to like about the roster. There's not a lot to like about the situation, to a point where you look at other jobs. I would take even, you know, looking at Miami, you know, Tampa Bay, you know, Cincinnati, all those look a lot better. I think the best, you know, job is New York. I don't think that's even arguable. Get Sam Darnold on your side. I like Robbie Anderson. I know he's a restricted free agent, but you can get him, re-sign him. That defense is getting better, I think. I think the linebacker's getting better. The corners are starting to find something there. There are a couple pieces away. I think the offensive line can improve. Running back, they can throw anyone back there. Elijah McGuire was able to have success with them. I don't even want to worry about that position. Invest in the offensive line. Maybe add one, maybe not Christian Herndon as his second best weapon. Give Sam Darnold another weapon and improve the defense here and there. They can compete there. Obviously, you're playing in a division that's been dominated by the Patriots for as long as I can really remember. But I think you're in a position with Sam Darnold that there's a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract. Therefore, you can build that roster, get a talented roster around him, and get to a point where you're competing in the AFC. Other places, I think you're dealing with a quarterback where you don't know if you like him. Ryan Tannehill, Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston. I'm not ready to commit to any of those guys. Maybe Dalton, if I had to choose one. With Darnold, I'm ready to bet on Darnold on his rookie contract and take that team up.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you brought up the Bengals too, because I think I would be tempted to say that's the best job, and people are probably going to scoff at that of like, oh, Mike Brown and the Bengals, ha ha ha. But you know, if you're a head coaching candidate and you're like, Cincy's going to keep me for like 10 years, I'm going to get some time. Like, I can, like, that roster's not bad. They just got destroyed by injuries. People forget how quickly, like, what that Bengals team was doing with Eifert, with Croft, with Dalton, with Ross, with Mixon, with that entire group. They traded for Cordy Glenn. Like, that offensive line was better. The offense with Bill Lazor. I mean, my thing, what I think the Bengals should do is just promote Bill Lazor and hire Vance Joseph and Joe Woods to run the defense and go from there. Like, that's what I would do. I wouldn't mess with much because there's a lot of talent. They just need to get healthy, and they need to replenish that defense. And that secondary, they've invested a lot of resources in Denard and everybody else back there that, like, I think they need to just hire someone who's experienced in kind of what they do with Terrell Austin, but just a better version. And I think Joe Woods and Vance Joseph, that the strength of the Broncos the last 2 years have been Chris Harris and that group, the no-fly zone. Like, I would do something like that where I would bring both of those guys in if possible, and I would just promote Bill Lazor because I think what he did in his adjustments to Andy Dalton, getting the ball out in 2 seconds or less and kind of learning what to work with what you have, and those guys getting older, and just when they're all healthy, that's a really good team. I mean, they were a Super Bowl contender just a few years ago, and the Bengals have had a lot of talent in the past. They just got a lot of skill players taken away, and Marvin Jones, Whitworth, and everybody else, and they kind of were not ready for that lack of depth to hit them, and they have the worst linebacking core in football, which I think we've talked about before. And I don't know. I think if I'm a coach where I'm like, I know I'll get time, I may not love Andy Dalton, but it's one of those Minnesota Vikings type deals where I know he's firmly in that middle tier. I know I have talent. I know I'm going to get time. I know this organization is going to back me for a while. I don't know. I feel like that's the most appealing to me. The Packers job would scare the crap out of me because we don't know. Aaron Rodgers is what, 36?
And you're getting up there.
We don't really know who's running the Packers right now with Murphy and Gutenkunst. And just that job just scares me. Like, it's kind of weird, but I would be very nervous about the Green Bay job. I'm not sure. I don't know. I might be crazy on that one to overthink the Green Bay job, but I don't think it's as lucrative as people make it seem. The Miami job, I think, is like the wild card, really good one, because if they got a good quarterback, that team's going 10-6 like every year with their skill position players. Like, their offense fell apart once Tannehill kind of got hurt. I mean, he started off with like 3-1, but once their two speedsters, Albert Wilson and Jakeem Grant, went down, that was it. Like, those were their guys, and they were just destroying defenses with Stills, Grant, and Wilson. And once those guys got hurt, it was like, oh. But their offensive line's good. They have talent there. They've invested there. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick is going to be a star in the secondary for a long time. They have talent in the secondary. They're obviously have some work to do with their pass rush and that kind of stuff. But the Dolphins' job, I think, is actually pretty tantalizing if you get the right quarterback in there, because I think there is a lot of talent around them. But I don't know. Am I overthinking all this? Do you agree with any of that?
I think I'm so scared of the Miami job because the if you mentioned about if getting you get a good quarterback is so huge. It's hard to even think of a quarterback they could target. Maybe they make a trade for Derek Carr. And no one on free agency is someone I'm going to fall in love with. And you look back at this quarterback class, I don't really like anyone there either. And even if you get the best quarterback in this class, I think you're going to take a year, maybe two, to develop. And then there you go, losing weapons. Defense gets older. Cameron Wake gets older. That gets so much harder to win with that team. I do think right now they have a lot of talent. The surrounding pieces are great. I love Xavier Howard. I think Fitzpatrick on the defense. Cameron Wake is still getting it done. You go on the offensive side, I think Kenyon Drake needs to be used more. It was criminal to see him used as infrequently as he was. Even when Frank Gore went down, them opting for Kalen Ballage or Kenyon Drake really was bewildering to me. I think give him more snaps. Look at wide receiver. I think Albert Wilson and Keen Grant are good pieces. I would like to see a number one wide receiver there, a game changer there.
Well, they tried it with Devontae Parker, and it's just never worked.
No, not at all. I think they also have to move on from him and try and find somebody that's better, find a guy that you could give 100 targets a year and really thrive with. Now, outside of that, though, again, the quarterback position, you know, not having a quarterback you're ready to get behind is the scariest thing to do when you jump in as a new head coach. And you're not sure how long you're going to get there and how long it's going to take to find one, given the current crop of, you know, quarterbacks in the class and the current crop of free agent quarterbacks. Unless you're, you know, that GM is willing to make a big trade for Derek Carr and try and build around him and maybe win, you know, 10 games and sneak into the playoffs. I don't know. I'm not ready to go into Miami unless they have a really good plan about getting a QB on that roster. Because if you don't have one, your first 2 years are probably going down the drain, and next thing you know, you're cut.
Yeah. Matt Stafford?
Ooh, I like Matt Stafford. Again, though, I think there's been so many times where you say the defense has gotten better. Maybe he's got a run game with Kerryon Johnson. But he still falls short for me. He makes too many turnover-worthy throws in the clutch.
That line was really bad this year. And that the Jim Bob Cooter regression this year. No one saw that coming. They even kept him around to make the offense just easier for him with Matt Patricia coming over, and it backfired in a major way. I don't know. I could see Stafford having like a cool second life in Miami, kind of like what they did with Drew Brees back in the day when they tried to do that with Nick Saban, and it fell through. And obviously, it's worked out pretty well for Drew in New Orleans. But the Dolphins are a team I could see doing something like that, like trading for him or signing Joe Flacco. I don't think they're going to go the development route after how this Tannehill stuff has unfolded. If they move on from Tannehill, I think they're going to go the veteran route.
You see, you know, the Miami reported that they are going to be moving on from Ryan Tannehill this offseason. Yeah. And I think with such an early report, those sources have something in the works. They're thinking about making a splash move, because there's no way this early in the decision-making process you're like, yes, we're moving on from him and we're going to hope we find a good QB in the draft. There's just no way. I think they are in a position where they're looking at, you know, a big trade from, you know, Stafford, or if you even look at other guys around the league, Derek Carr is obviously a name you mentioned. They have to have a plan to get a new guy in there, because I think, like you said, I think they have similar opinion of their roster. I think they like the guys they have on defense. I think they can win with the offensive line and the play they have at the running back position, but they know they need a QB, and I think they're going to have to make an aggressive move to get one.
Yeah. Last thing, and then we'll go. What do you make of the Antonio Brown stuff today? He's doing videos with James Harrison. People are turning on him. Ryan Clark just went nuclear on ESPN over him. There's mixed reports about the trade stuff. Some people are like, it's not happening. You'll see it. He does this every year. He'll be back next fall. And we also know the money aspect that makes this all very complicated, the amount of dead money that they would have. They moved him and everything else. It seems like he's getting a lot of the flack, and it's actually good for Ben Roethlisberger, because he was under the radar, not very good this year, and making Antonio Brown the scapegoat here and not being a team guy and everything else. Like, he was still really good. Like, you want Antonio Brown on your team because he's a really good professional football player, and the Steelers are a lot worse if Antonio Brown is not on this roster. I think he is, like, Le'Veon Bell is one thing, but I think Antonio Brown is a different thing entirely, and it's interesting, for sure. Maybe for Mike Tomlin's sanity, it might be best to move on and, like, shake things up, because I still can't imagine what he's dealing with on a daily basis with just everything in that locker room. But I don't know. I think it's fascinating, but I would keep him at the very least.
Without too much speculation and looking at the off-field stuff, I think Antonio Brown needs a change of scenery that he's not going to get.
Okay.
I mean, I think he needs a change of scenery to, you know, to get back on. I think that locker room is just really starting to crumble. I think the Le'Veon Bell situation was obviously different. He wanted more money, or else he wasn't going to play. Antonio Brown sounds like he's disgruntled with Ben Roethlisberger and maybe other people in the locker room. Give him a new change of scenery, but I don't think, you know, the Steelers brass are going to do that. I think they had a chance to do that with Le'Veon Bell. They didn't. They had a chance to do that with Antonio. They have a chance to do that with Antonio Brown, and I don't think they will. But would I like to see him go somewhere else? I think absolutely. I think you don't want players like that in your locker room. You don't want players that are stirring up stuff with your key leaders. And when he was a key leader, having that kind of presence, I think that's when you start to see things go downhill.
Not according to Ryan Clark.
Yeah, true. Very true. I think blaming Antonio Brown for this is not what I'm getting at. I think the locker room dysfunction is a part of not what Antonio Brown's starting, but it's there. And I think it will be there for as long as Antonio Brown's there, or Ben Roethlisberger is there, or other guys that are starting it. You know, moving Antonio Brown to where he wants to go, if he did request a trade — obviously some say he did, some say he didn't — I think it makes sense. I think you don't want your locker room, regardless of what the source is. If you're so unwilling to trade away the source, whether it's Ben Roethlisberger or other players in the roster, trade away a guy that's upset with the source, get something in return, and that way it works out best for both sides.
Yeah. I don't know. They're another team kind of in that weird zone where it's like they can't really move on from Ben as he's regressing, and like this is not the draft to do that. You're waiting for it to really burst, but I just don't see it bursting in Pittsburgh. And if they make the playoffs, are we really having this conversation? I think their main focus, if I'm a Pittsburgh fan, my biggest fear is losing Mike Munchak this offseason, because he has been the like that defense. Obviously, the Keith Butler jokes speak for themselves, but like without him these last couple years, who knows if Ben Roethlisberger is still playing? Like what he's done for that offensive line with DeCastro and everyone there. They went under the radar. Villanueva, all those guys became household names because of Munchak. Like that offensive line used to be terrible. He comes in and it's a total 180 because they invested so many picks in that offensive line that like it would make me very nervous if he took the other job. Like what this looks like next year if they lose him and Bell's gone obviously and just a lot of turnover. Like if I'm a Pittsburgh fan, I'm like, whatever Colbert's got to do, however much of a race he has to give Munchak to stay in Pittsburgh, you got to do it. I think he's a Pennsylvania native, so I guess that helps. But I think that's the real storyline we're not talking about enough, is Munchak taking these head coaching interviews, and it's like, oh, God, the Steelers lose him. That's a problem.
And good offensive line coaches are hard to find.
Yes,
and I think you look around the league. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You look at Oakland. You know, hiring Tom Cable in is a household name, and that offensive line has gone from one of the best in the league in 2016 to easily one of the worst with three of the same players.
Well, hold on. If it was Tom Cable's fault, then the Seahawks offensive line would not have improved a lot this year. Oh, wait, hold on. The Seahawks offensive line's a lot better. Okay,
exactly. And Seahawks offensive line improves with a bunch of players that no one really has even heard of or castaways. I mean, DJ Fluker has improved. You know, Pocic is giving them good returns. Somebody that, when you look at those reports, that Tom Cable was trying, they had to push Tom Cable away from Pocic so that he wouldn't know that they were targeting him. There was some, like, inter-disgruntled, like, about, like, Tom Cable being involved and bringing in Pocic. It was crazy to see what was happening in Seattle in Tom Cable's years there, because he has such big pull, you know, when they brought in a Fetty and when they brought in other offensive other offensive linemen, their high draft picks that did not pan out. And you look, the same thing has happened in Oakland. I love Colton Miller, give me it. I love Brandon Parker, let's do it. Both those guys start all year, and they're all among the worst offensive tackles in the NFL. I mean, it's very difficult to have a good offensive line with Tom Cable at the helm right now, given his track record. All you can speak to is the play of the offensive line he's coached, and all of them have been very, very bad, regardless of the scheme he draws up. And yes, maybe he's, you know, the run blocking scheme is correct, but he's not able to coach technique correctly. He's not able to improve these offensive line guys enough for them to really have success, as we've seen with Seattle and now Oakland.
Yeah. All right, Austin. Well, this has been great. As always, I think we could talk about football all day. What do you have coming out this week at ProFootballFocus.com?
Releasing all pro team. I think we released that this week, and we also released our all rookie team tomorrow, which will be exciting, looking at the most talented rookies around here. I can give you a hint. Mark Andrews will be the tight end on the all rookie team. He ended up grading very well, better than the guy the Ravens drafted in the first round that I think is nearing retirement already at 27, 28 years old. I lose track. But Mark Andrews had an exciting season. He's a guy that I really like coming out of Oklahoma. It's great to see him translate that in the NFL. I'm excited to see him in the postseason with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. I don't know if he's no Crockett Gilmore for me.
Oh, my goodness. I do love Crockett Gilmore.
He won me a fantasy week. Dude, I'm a Crockett Gilmore lifer. He had like a 35-point fantasy week a couple years ago. I picked him up off the waiver wire. I was like, there's just something about tight ends in Baltimore. They have this weird revolving door where like Todd Heap and like Ed Dixon, and they just have these weird
Max
guys
Williams,
pop
Nick
in and
Boyle.
Out. Yeah.
They've had everyone.
Works. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but it just works. I mean, they're doing the same thing in the running back now with moving on from the flavor of the month last year, flavor of the year, I should say, and Alex Collins. And it's now your dude that I believe you like a lot, correct?
No, yeah. I like Gus Edwards. I like Gus Edwards a ton. I also like Kenneth Dixon a lot. I think both those guys.
He can stay healthy.
Yeah, Kenneth Dixon coming out of La Tech, I was a huge fan. The dude forced missed tackles like no other, and he's starting to do that now that he's healthy. But Gus Edwards came out of nowhere. You know, former Miami, Florida running back that wasn't getting the touches he wanted, ended up transferring to Rutgers. does okay in Pro Football Focus's system, grades all right, but then just comes down in the Ravens' run scheme and is able to force missed tackles and have the yards and the contact numbers he's having, he's a load to bring down too. The more you watch him, and be like, wow, this guy's kind of huge, and he's like bulldozing over people. I love watching a good running back like that, and I think Gus Edwards has been exciting and really been a great compliment to Lamar Jackson in a run-heavy offense.
Yeah. Last thing, then we'll go. Le'Veon Bell is a...
Ooh, I think he's an Oakland Raider. I think Le'Veon Bell signs with the Oakland Raiders. There's one.
Is he old enough?
Left.
Doug Martin had like a 100-yard game to close the year. I think you do it. I think you run it back with the hamster, the muscle hamster.
No, not a chance. I think there's only one regime left that values the running back position enough to pay him $8-9 million a year. And I think it's John Gruden and the Silver and Black. I could easily see Le'Veon Bell getting exactly the money he wants with the Oakland Raiders because of how much they still value running backs and want to be back in 1998.
Okay. I'm going to guess Philly.
Wow. Okay. I like that.
I think Philly is just going to do something weird like that. They're just, I mean, the Adam stuff has worked, but I don't know. They've relied on Darren Sproles a lot late. I don't see Roseman like investing a, they've done it with LeGarrette Blount. Like they're not afraid to go. I don't know. I could see McCoy back in Philly too next year. So maybe that's what it is. But I think Le'Veon and that group would be fun. It would add more intrigue to the Philly Pittsburgh stuff.
Yeah,
him
for sure.
Going to Philly, that'd be fun. But anyway, like I said, we could talk about football all day. But Austin, I really do appreciate it. We can follow you on Twitter at @PFF_AustinGale, and read you every day at ProFootballFocus.com. Austin, it's always a pleasure, and I will talk with you very soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast, and I am now joined by longtime friend of the pod of the DailyNorseman.com. He's still reeling from the Minnesota Vikings missing the playoffs once again, and very sad circumstances, very depressing circumstances. I unfortunately had to watch the majority of that game and just keep waiting for it to happen. And, you know, at the very, I think we can at least admit it was nice to see Kirk Cousins find a way to not only try and lead his team to the playoffs, but also Adam Thielen to go run the correct routes for Kirk Cousins so he can get him that football, right?
Yeah, it just went, everything went according to plan, especially both games against the Bears this season. It seemed like that offense just, they couldn't be stopped.
Oh my God. So, there's so much to unpack with this Vikings team because the Falcons, I feel like it's a very easy situation to diagnose. What happened there, they got destroyed by injuries. They don't have the depth that they claim to have before the year of like, oh, this is the best roster in football, right. Blah, 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 top to bottom. And they lose Deion Jones and a couple other guys and that's that. It's a little bit different for Minnesota because this team, like, weirdly, they started off slow defensively, and I want to get your opinion on this, because George Edwards is getting head coaching looks as of this recording, and that was one of the bigger things when you're watching them early on. You're like, what's going on here? They've invested a lot in the cornerback position, the back of the, just with Harrison Smith and everybody else, and you're like, okay, this should be better, and obviously the Everson Griffin stuff, I think, played a role a little bit as well, but, like, this defense was not, like, they were not the number one defense in football again, and it's really hard to replicate. I understand that, but like this kind of team, and when you have a mid-tier quarterback like Kirk Cousins, which I don't think is a slight, I like Kirk Cousins, but it's just you have to kind of look at him in that Andy Dalton fold where it's like if you have the right pieces around him, if he's in the right incubator, you can win a Super Bowl with him. Like Andy Dalton, the Bengals could have won the Super Bowl 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
That year where he got hurt and they had to start AJ McCarron in that awful home wild card game against the Steelers that they lost. But because the AFC was wide open that year and you never know. And Minnesota had a great shot last year, but I digress. The Vikings defense was the first thing that stood out to me of like, oh, if that defense had not gotten off to the start they did, they would not have been in the hole that they kind of were. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't like the offense was lighting the world on fire either. And right. And the defense eventually turned it around. The offense, especially yes. In that last game, never did. But I do agree with you. It was a much slower start. And regression was bound to happen, A, because they were the number one defense last year. And B, they were the healthiest defense by a long shot last year. I think Sendejo missed a couple games last year. And as far as starters go, I think that's pretty much it. There might have been one or two other games. But, of course, now this year they had the Everson Griffin situation where he missed several games. Sendejo missed most of the season. He's probably done as a Viking. They had player, you know, Xavier Rhodes missed the last game, and that was turned out to be very important, especially in that deep touchdown or the deep near touchdown the Bears scored. But, yeah, it was kind of you know, I didn't think they were going to regress that much, especially at the beginning of the season. That was kind of, I don't really know. That was pretty inexplicable. The Bills game, you can just tell their heads weren't in it, and it was probably because of the Griffin thing, but even so, it was the Bills at home, and they just didn't show. Yeah. And it was just kind of, this team, it was the classic kind of mediocre team, is that they were up by 10 points, they looked like an amazing team, but if they were down by 10 points, you could basically hang it up. You literally could, because every time the Vikings fell behind by double digits, they end up not winning the game. The only one where they didn't lose was that crazy week two tie against the Packers. So
were you watching, though, those games? And is it something Kirk Cousins did? Because that's the easy talking point of, like, Kirk Cousins cannot play from behind. He's not going to lead you on a big-time comeback, down 21-0. But then again, neither was Case Keenum.
Right.
Neither was Teddy Bridgewater. And I love Teddy. We'll ride for Teddy till the end of time. It's not like Kirk Cousins is all that different than the quarterbacks that have been before him. I think the only difference is he got $80 million guaranteed. But when you're watching these games as a fan, as an analyst, were you thinking to yourself, Kirk Cousins can't do this? Were you writing down notes of like, oh, Cousins did that, he didn't take a shot there? Is he like refusing to take chances when he's down? And that's why? Like, what did you see this year when they fell behind that they just couldn't come back? Is there anything in particular? Was it a Cousins thing? Was it the offensive play calling? What was it?
I think the woes of this team still have to start with the offensive line. It was kind of the Achilles heel for this team going into the season, before left guard, the starting left guard, Nick Easton, got hurt, and before Pat Elflein, their center, who started all year, but definitely wasn't as good as his rookie year, because he was out with pretty serious injuries basically the entire preseason and never really caught up. Mike Remmers was still what he was. He's a much better right tackle than a right guard, but he played right guard all season. And Riley Reiff, again, was another one of those pieces that the Vikings probably might have overpaid for a little bit. But given the situation when they signed him, it seemed like a pretty good deal. Again, he wasn't...
Teams just have to do that. Like the Giants did it with Nate Solder, because they're like, we just can't have Ereck Flowers out there again.
Exactly.
Like, you overpay for mediocrity. Well, and sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah, the Vikings couldn't have people like TJ Clemmings out there again. You know, it's that kind of thing. And
you just invested $80 million in Kirk Cousins. You can't...
Right. Well, and it's still... And he still turned out to be the most pressured quarterback in the NFL. And I think...
Yeah.
The one thing that I kind of noticed it in training camp, and I noticed it throughout the season as well. The big knock I would have on Cousins, I think he's a brilliant quarterback at reading defenses before the snap and knowing how plays are supposed to unfold. But when it doesn't happen the way that he thinks it's going to happen, that's where he gets in trouble, especially compared to someone like Keenum, who I don't think the Vikings would have any better record with this season. But that's another digression. But I think
you have to mention that with this whole conversation,
right,
of like the people who are ripping Kirk Cousins. You're like, do you really think that if they had just kept Keenum that this season goes differently? Did you see what he did in Denver this year?
I don't know.
Yeah,
it's the same. I mean, they weren't going to go 13-3 again just based on their schedule alone and their health last year. They were bound to take a step back. This big of a step back, I think, caught everyone by surprise, including myself. I thought they'd be around that, maybe the 10-6. You know, they'd be competing with Green Bay for a division title, and that was obviously incredibly wrong.
Hey, man, I had Green Bay in the Super Bowl. I mean, half of my Super Bowl pick is still alive. I had Chargers, Packers, but
I had Chargers, Saints before, so I'm sitting okay right now. I still don't think.
See, I left the Saints stuff. I predicted them to win the division last year when no one was catching on to that. I'm like, I don't know. I like this too. I like Sean Payton with this group. Michael Thomas is a freak of nature. Dennis Allen's just going to blitz a lot. There's some young Greg Williams vibes going on there. They're going to score 45. I love their offensive line. They have the two best tackles, like the best tackle combination, I think, in football, with Armstead and Rzynczyk? I think it's Rzynczyk.
Rzynczyk, maybe?
On the left and right side.
Yeah.
But they're both first round picks, and they're both just anchors, and that team is just so perfectly put together. But Saints Chargers is a very good pick, and that seems pretty likely. And Philip Rivers versus Drew Brees,
That would be a lot of fun. I mean, you can't really go wrong with most of the AFC quarterbacks in it this year. That's a blast. But I'm sure the odds-on favorite right now is Chiefs Saints, and you can't really argue against that too much. But it'd be fun just to see Philip Rivers. I'm always a sucker for teams that have never won it before. That's why I was rooting for your Falcons so hard a couple years back. Is just the teams that win their first one that gives me a little bit of hope that the Vikings could do it eventually.
Well, hey, they interviewed Mike Mularkey this week, so the Falcons are on their way back.
Yes, they are. Yeah, well, the Vikings are interviewing Hugh Jackson for offensive coordinator, apparently. So
why was that a shocker? He worked with Mike Zimmer in Cincinnati. Zimmer is a Cincy lifer.
He's so poisonous, though. I understand that he was a much better offensive coordinator when he had that position than head coach, but you can't get that stink off of him the last 5-6 years. I can't separate the two. I saw all Hard Knocks. I saw what a anti-leader he is. But I couldn't handle that after the season they had. And if they go in that,
do you think they should keep Stefanski?
I wouldn't be opposed to it just because he's so familiar with he's been with the team for a dozen years. And again, I would like them to bring in. I wouldn't mind him going into the college ranks if they had a couple, the Oklahoma coach or someone in that vein I don't know how well it would go.
Kingsbury, you're just like, hey, pull him away because he's doing head coaching interviews. But then again, I don't think he would leave USC now unless he got a head coaching offer. It's really strange. He took that job and now he's taking head coaching interviews. He's hard to read. Lincoln Riley made it clear that he's staying. He's had the contract extension. It seems like he genuinely wants to stay at Oklahoma until he can win a national title. And then he'll probably start sniffing around more and getting more serious about moving on. But Kingsbury is fascinating. I mean, it would be an absolute dumpster fire to hire him as your head coach in 2018 or 2019 now. But as an offensive coordinator, my thing is, I think if Bill Lazor is not retained by the new coaching staff in Cincinnati, I think that's who I would target if I'm Minnesota. I love Lazor. And what he was doing with Dalton before everybody got hurt, and there's a familiarity there. He's like the perfect Bill Lazor to me seems like the perfect mid-tier quarterback whisperer, where it's like, give him Ryan Tannehill, give him Andy Dalton, give him Kirk Cousins, and he'll find magic. That ball, you know what Andy Dalton did behind a bad offensive line? Bill Lazor stepped in and was like, we're not doing this anymore.
Right.
Like, they orchestrated the Mike D'Antoni offense for Andy Dalton, where it's like, we're going so college-y with Mixon, Ross, and all these guys, and we're getting the ball out in a few seconds because you don't have time. You don't have time for these routes to develop. You don't have time to take these long drops. And it worked before Eifert and that whole team died. And
their entire defense,
Vikings
too.
Should do the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing that you have to do these days is if you have to coach. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but you have to coach to your players' strengths and hide their weaknesses. Yeah. That's what the Patriots have done for 20 plus years. Yes, they have Brady and Belichick, but Belichick is one of the greatest at hiding what his team does poorly and accentuating what his team does well. And when you have a team like the Vikings that weren't very good at offensive line before a couple of key injuries. Yeah, it wasn't as bad as the old Norv Turner 2016, where they were still having Bradford take 7-step drops most of the time.
Oh my God!
But I mean, it was for me between Zimmer and DeFilippo, it seemed to be more of a philosophical thing where DeFilippo really wanted to do a lot of kind of out of the box, look at me, this is my stepping stone to a head coaching position. And Zimmer, as old school as he is, kind of wanted just the bread and butter plays. Give me what works. Don't try to wow him too much. And of course, it makes me a little nervous how Zimmer has rightfully said he wanted to be more involved in the offense because he is the head coach. He's not just the defensive coordinator anymore. But when they were down at halftime and he came back to Erin Andrews and told her that they wanted to run more in the second half, that kind of was also, it gave me a little bit of pause. Mm-hmm. So they need to find someone that can either convince Zimmer that his system is going to work and they can get on the same page, or just match Zimmer's philosophy, because obviously what DeFilippo was doing didn't work on a number of different levels. And Stefanski showed it, against a couple of bad teams. But again, two of the three games that he was offensive coordinator, the Vikings didn't get a first down until halfway through the second quarter. So I'd be open to interviewing more.
Not great.
Yeah, not great. So I'd take a look at Stefanski.
I think it's Lazor time.
Yeah, that's of all the names, that's the suggestions. I kind of like that one.
You could bring Daryl Bevel back so the Falcons don't hire him.
No, we're good. We're good with him.
What's Brad Childress up to these days? Coaching? He's coaching the Atlanta AAF.
Yes, he is. He's busy. He's got that new league to before it folds in 2 seasons.
That's gonna be wild. I don't know the Viking stuff, and then there's the elf in the room. We haven't even talked about it because it's such an uncomfortable conversation to have. But I think you know where I'm going with this was that the Sperano stuff,
right?
Like, it's really hard to find a good offensive line coach in the NFL. Only a few teams have one. And the Vikings had a really good one. And there's nothing they could do about that. It's a really sad, awful situation. And we didn't really talk about, like, this offensive line fell off a cliff. And I feel like it's fair to wonder if this offense doesn't do that if Sperano doesn't pass away, right?
That's an absolutely fair question. And talking to, or you seeing people talk to the players and coaches throughout the season, especially, I mean, the timing of it too. It was right as, I think they actually pushed back training camp starting a day because of his funeral. So that was just right as you're ramping up for the season to have something like that happen. And Sperano was much more than just a position coach on the Vikings. He was kind of Andy Carlson, who does a Vikings podcast, he called him his consigliere. I think that was a pretty good word for him. He was really, he was kind of Zimmer's right hand man, especially on that offensive side. They had,
they're both Parcells guys,
right? And they were both they're both that gruff, straight out of Central casting, into it kind of coaches. And I think it really hit the team hard, and the offensive line said, especially, and the offensive line was kind of done. They filled his spot kind of by committee with existing position coaches. And you have to wonder, I don't think they were going to be the best unit in the league by any stretch of the imagination, no matter who's coaching them. But again, this offensive line didn't need to be they didn't need to be the old Cowboys lines. They just needed to be good enough to give Cousins some time. And when you look at the pressure numbers, they definitely weren't good enough. And Cousins is, like you said, it's not really a knock on him. He kind of is who he is. He'll get you the numbers, but he's not that top tier quarterback who's going to change games for you by himself. So I think the Vikings' main focus in this offseason has to be getting an offensive line that's a lot better and getting the pieces around Cousins, because you're stuck with him for the next 2 years, because those next two guaranteed years aren't going anywhere.
And they're not going to be bad. That's the other thing. It's like, they're going to be, Cousins is going to keep you afloat. He's too consistent, like you said, or he like overthinks everything. He knows where everything's supposed to go. But that's also a problem when you're playing from behind, is that's when you have to improvise. Yep. That's when you have to go kind of like Brett Favre-ian and just kind of figure stuff out and try stuff out and take risks and do whatever it takes to get you back in the game. The Mahomes stuff, where it feels like they could be down 28 points and it doesn't matter. There are quarterbacks that can do that, and there are other quarterbacks who are just not programmed that way, where they're like, every part of my brain is telling me not to do that because the odds of me completing that kind of pass or me doing anything like that are not good.
Right.
Even if you complete that kind of pass, it changes the game and gets you back into it. And it just, it's hard to change that. I feel like to change that kind of thought process for a quarterback, especially as polished as Cousins is now, where it's just, you have to live with him in that kind of zone, which is okay because you can win with him. It's just, you have to put the right team around him.
Correct.
And I think they've done a pretty good job of that. I mean, I think putting him there's a reason he chose the Vikings, and his free agent circus is, they have two, like, you can make the case, the best wide receiver duo in football.
Mm-hmm.
You know what helps when you have a mid-tier quarterback is having elite talent around him. And I think outside of the Dalvin Cook stuff, I mean, hey, I think Laquon Treadwell is, what, 3 years away from being 3 years away at this point? So we're getting closer to breakout Laquon Treadwell year. So that's nice to know. I love that Jarius Rice is still doing stuff for this team. That was wild to me this
Jarius
year.
Jarius, right? Oh, he's on the Panthers this year.
Oh, wait, not yes, Jarius, yes. Right? Who was it then? Who am I thinking about?
Aldrick Robinson came out of nowhere. We picked him
Maybe
up.
Maybe that was it. Maybe it's Aldrick Robinson, former Falcon legend, Robinson. Who am I thinking of? There's someone else. There's someone who popped up on the, was it Kendall Wright?
Yeah, but the Vikings cut him after training camp. They did pick him up.
There's someone else. I know I'm thinking of. Okay.
As far as people that got catches, Aldrick Robinson was third. Treadwell's.
It must have been Aldrick.
I mean,
Robinson.
They had the nice one, Chad Beebe game. That was fun. He could be.
I think it was Aldrick Robinson. That makes sense. Because what is he, 19?
17. He took the...
Okay, so he was 19 in Atlanta, and he was 17. That's why I thought it was Jarius Wright. So Jarius Wright was like number 17.
Well, that was the fun thing. When Kendall Wright came, he was number 17. And
okay, this is all getting very confusing. We've lost all...
If you had a Jarius Wright jersey for some reason, you could keep it. And then they cut him, of course. So,
oh my God. Yeah. Okay. Weird. But yeah, I just lost my train of thought because now this is going to drive me nuts to this receiving duo. But anyway.
So you're talking about just how you have to surround the team with Cousins, and that's why Cousins chose the Vikings, because, I mean, yeah, if you would have asked almost anyone before the season who is top to bottom has the best roster in the NFC, you'd have to go with the Vikings. You know,
well,
maybe
the Falcons.
Well, yeah, before everyone got hurt. Even before their defense absolutely fell apart, they were a couple holes there, I think. But yeah, they'd be they were up there. Hey, we were both high on the Falcons before the season. It's just that they
dark times, Eric. So be glad you're at least not the Atlanta Falcons right now, which are currently having the offseason from hell. And it might kill friend of the pod Falcoholic Chambers, Mr. Matt Chambers. I think this might actually kill him. But yeah, The Viking stuff, though, too, that I wanted to mention is that, like, the Sprano, so we talked about that, but what else can they do? Because Thielen's on this roster, Diggs is there, Dalvin Cook has to improve. I mean, I guess you could lock Latavius Murray up for another 10 years. I think there's a lot of meat on those bones. You could tires on Doug Martin if the Raiders are ready to move on in Oakland, see if he can be that backup that... Minnesota, that ground and pound.
Well,
that
Murray,
Mike Zimmer's always wanted.
Murray already was that Oakland Raiders.
I was going to say they have to do a redux.
Yeah, no, I'd rather throw a couple bucks back at Murray to bring him back than the old.
What's Matt Asiata doing these days?
That's a great question. I mean, every time if he scored one touchdown, he'd score three touchdowns. That was kind of his thing.
It felt
like three auto. We call
Peyton Hillis.
There we go.
Let's bring Peyton Hillis back.
I mean, Mike Alstott has to have a kid by now, right?
Right. Jim Kleinsaucer, how old is he? 46? Yeah, I think he could still
play.
Exactly. Yeah. Kleinsaucer, you didn't think I would throw that name out?
No,
there,
he's Vikings Twitter, at least, Hall of Famer. We love Kleinsaucer on these parts. Even though growing in college, he ran over my alma mater because he went to North Dakota and I went to North Dakota State. And I think that was back when both teams were Division II. And he ran all over North Dakota State at least 2 or 3 years when I was in college. So, yeah.
How are you feeling about your coach leaving for Kansas State?
It was bittersweet. It was kind of inevitable. I mean, it was the same thing as Craig Bowl before him, before Coach Kleiman, they were going to move on to bigger and better things. But to move on to a Power 5 school, that is pretty cool. Like, that's kind of unprecedented to make that jump. And I think Kansas State fans are going to be happy. I mean, everyone kind of thought there'd be a decent drop off with Kleiman, and if anything, the team got better. It's pretty crazy. So, yeah, I was a little upset at the timing because it was right before the semifinals against who I thought was the NDSU's toughest competition. But they won. They're back in Frisco, so at least I have one football team that doesn't let me down every season.
When did it start to feel like? So the Vikings stuff too. They were going to be a wild card team. Even if they made the playoffs, I don't think they were... Like, the NFC was just so stacked this year it wouldn't have mattered.
And they were going to play that same Bears team who, if I'm the Bears, I would have let the Vikings come back in that game because I would have said, oh, there is no way...
I'd rather play the Vikings than Nick Foles and the Eagles for sure.
Exactly. But it's fine that the Bears put us out of our misery a week earlier because, this team, the way that they were playing and just kind of the mindset that they seemed to have... They weren't going to do anything. Maybe they could have pulled out one crazy, okay, everything's going right for, you know, kind of like the Dolphins game, except against a good team a couple of weeks ago. But they weren't making a run. They were too up and down all season, and especially with how they finished. Yeah, I'm fine with not having to stay up writing another preview article this week. So,
well. If there's one thing it's good to be in the NFL these days, it's the number one seed, because I think Wingo tweeted this out last week that like five of the last six Super Bowl contestants have been number one seeds.
Yeah, and especially so, I think out of the AFC has been the big one that like, at least one of the conferences that's been like three or four in a row number one seed. So
yeah, it's probably the AFC. But yeah, I just, you can't, like, this just, it was a season from hell for Minnesota. It's one of those hard pills to swallow where it's like, oh, we can just get in, we want to fight for it. And it's like, well, what, like, even if the Falcons had clawed their way back, they're still losing that first round. Like, there's just, yeah, it was nice, but the Falcons saw last year when they won in Los Angeles. And it's like, oh, I talked myself into it where I'm like, oh my God, are they going to do this? Are they going to find a way around this? And they get all the way to Philly and they play Philly tough and then that's it. But it's Philly survived because guess what? They were the number one seed and they got to play at home the whole time and they made it to the Super Bowl because, I mean, I don't know if they do that if Nick Foles has to go on the road.
No, and especially season. With the big turning point in that NFC Championship game was the pick six that the Eagles had to make it 7. Because the Vikings, if you remember, marched down the field in their first drive and scored. It was like 7-0. It was like, okay, the Vikings mean business. And that was literally the last good play they had of the game. And I think it was a combination of that that lively crowd they have in Philadelphia and just kind of the shell shock that the Vikings can never get over. And yeah, if that game's at US Bank Stadium, and I think it might have been a much different result. But of course, we got to see all those fun Eagles fans come and visit our fair Twin Cities 2 weeks later. It was great. It was kind of like the Saints if they make the Super Bowl in Atlanta this year, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's the city's going to have to shut down. I don't know how it's going to go. I just know it's not going to go well. Like what all it's going to include, I'm not certain, but it's not going
to
be good.
You know what? I went to a Premier League game last year when the Vikings played the Browns. I went and saw my favorite team, West Ham, which is the most random Premier League team you can like. I watched them play. It was actually a road game, and it was still in London, but it was at Crystal Palace. And they literally usher you in. Like they have a bar or two that are the visitors' bars that you can go to. If you go to any other bar, it's your own fault. You'll get beat up, basically, is what I heard. And then you make the walk, you go into your own visitors' gates, you get your own visitors' concessions and beer stands, and you go into your own visitors'. There's two sections that are the visitor section, and it's all basically quarantined off by police officers the entire way around. So maybe that's what they'll have to do for the Super Bowl for all the Saints fans.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, they're not going to do that because that would take too much organization, and there's no way that happens. It's just going to be a mess, and downtown is just going to be a war zone for like 12 hours. But I mean, honestly, it could be the best thing. Like if the Saints were to lose in Atlanta, the Super Bowl in Atlanta, that the Saints fans having to leave that game would be rough for them. But if they win and celebrate, that's a problem. I don't know. It's very realistic and it's a very strong possibility, but we're not there yet, so we don't have to think about
there
it.
There you go.
What do you make of the Zimmer stuff? Do you think he should be on the hot seat? Because I don't at all.
The guy has gone 47-32-1, I think, is his record.
Yeah.
And if you look back at all of the things he's had to endure, both on and off the field, it's absolutely amazing that he has a record like that. I mean, it's with his own personal health stuff with his eye, Teddy's Bridgewater's knee exploding 2 days or a week before the season. He's had a different starting quarterback every single year. And you have the Griffin thing this year. You have all sorts of, different kind of things happening to the team that's really kind of out of his control. And I thought it was absolutely ridiculous for people calling for his head after. I think it's more of the, everyone's just super mad and, fan is short for fanatic and they kind of just went off on it. And the Spielman things I can kind of understand a little bit more just because, they have failed in the offensive line. It's been a problem for 3 years now. This isn't a new thing that all of a sudden popped up because of a couple of injuries. So I get that a little bit.
Walking through that door.
Exactly. You got to coach him up, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more just the fact that I would like to see some continuity because, again, the core is locked up for the next two seasons. Bring the group back for this year, especially if it goes belly up again and they miss the playoffs again next year. Sure, then you got to make some heads roll. I understand that, but I just think a little bit of continuity of the offseason, build around what you have, because they didn't 8-7-1 was very disappointing, but it's still technically
it's not in the world,
right? Exactly. And it was a disappointment this year, but again, you play a second place schedule instead of a first place schedule now, and you have a couple bounces go your way. You know, you have a kicker that makes field goals in week two, or if you don't absolutely lay an egg here or there, all of a sudden you're at 10 or 11 wins and you're back in the tournament and everything is great again. So yeah, I just don't, I get why people are burning everything down, fire everyone, but it's
who do you want? You had Leslie Frazier in the fold for a while. You had Brad Childress. Like, Mike Zimmer it's like the Tomlin stuff where it's like, yeah, they're not a perfect coach, but like, not everybody gets a Bill Belichick. It's just not how it works.
Right.
Like, just take, if you have a top 10 coach that you just know is steady and like could be the best coach in your franchise's history, just run with this, because it could be so much worse.
Exactly. And again, every time you change stuff, and that's another big thing I think the Vikings suffered, especially at the beginning of the year, getting off to the slow start. They had the new offensive coordinator and they had a new quarterback, and that's just those two things alone are tough. And if you're trying to overhaul everything, that's going to set you, I mean, that's, then you're looking at all these big, great contract extensions that you signed this previous offseason. You're basically throwing those away, because those are going to be expired by the time you're back to contending. So yeah.
Here's what you do for the Vikings this offseason. You hire Bill Lazor. You also, so guess what? A lot of people didn't know this. Part of the reason the Bengals offensive line was much improved this year, outside of trading for Cordy Glenn from Buffalo, they traded offensive line coaches with the Dallas Cowboys this offseason. The Cowboys fired their offensive line coach midway through the season because he was the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line coach last year, which was a dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. So they promoted Mark Colombo, who's just a very large human being that was a Dallas Cowboy offensive lineman for a while. So it didn't work out. It worked out in Cincinnati. And if that guy is not retained by that coaching staff, the guy who built the Cowboys offensive line with Zach Martin and Tyron Smith and everybody is available, that is what you're doing. He already has the history in Cincinnati now. Zimmer, just go pick up those guys. Just accumulate those assets. Just take that whole offensive side of the ball, bring them all into the Minnesota incubator, and draft another cornerback in the first round. They just need to keep taking shots at that. Like, that's what I would do. That's how you solve the Vikings, is take another corner in the first round, and then take all the offensive coaches on the Bengals from this past year.
Yes, I'm sure that would go over just fine with the Vikings fan base. If they don't take a...
Point them to me. I would like for one of them. I'll fight them. I don't care. I think that's what you should do. I genuinely believe I would do that. That would be my... Zimmer, I know you're a long-time listener to the podcast. You and Spielman, I know you're in your team meeting as you're listening to this. I promise you can do no wrong with Bill Lazor, the Cowboys turned Bengals offensive line coach, and then drafting more corners.
I think
that's what you
they'll be fine at corner, unless maybe they get rid of Trey.
Like, they were starting guys.
Yeah,
this year,
but it was because Rhodes is hurt in their first round pick.
That's what happens. Injuries happen. You can never have a
They had Holton Hill. Holton Hill came out and actually performed pretty well this year. They had Mackenzie Alexander step up. He's still got another year left on his rookie deal.
You can never have enough
corners. No, and the Vikings proved that. They proved that because they drafted a corner in the first round, and they're still thin by the end of the year. But they still got to get offensive line.
The Falcons didn't even have an interception this year at corner.
Okay, I was like, I didn't think at all.
No, at corner.
Yeah, wow, that's not great. It's almost as bad as...
Devontae Kazee had like 93 for himself, but like... Yeah, no, not great.
No, it's like the Raiders having 13 total sacks this season after getting rid of Khalil Mack.
Well, like, there was a weird stat with that, because I was talking to Austin about the Raiders a little bit before. Arden Key has like a billion almost sacks, and it's like driving Paul Gunther, their defensive coordinator, mad, because he just gets his hand on the quarterback all the time and just never brings them down, and he just doesn't know how to bring guys down, and it's... very frustrating, because he has all this talent, but he actually doesn't get them on the ground. And that's a problem if you're a pass rusher.
Well, if Pro Football Focus still will like you, though, because that still counts in their book almost as much.
So. That's true. Hey, I love
Pro Football. So do I. I love those guys. Yeah. I use them in all my articles.
Yeah, they're great. But yeah, I think that's what we do. I think Vikings fans will be happy. I think we're on the same page. I might let George Edwards go, like, just to use some sort of scapegoat, get someone else in there. If, you know, Joe Woods is available, bring him in from Denver. If he doesn't follow Vance Joseph wherever he's going, maybe sneak around that. I don't know if they've crossed paths, Zimmer and Woods, but I don't know. Or you could do the Dan Quinn thing and just fire Edwards and take control of the defense and say, this is my thing again.
Well, Zimmer's already calling the plays anyway. So, George Edwards isn't doing a ton, I would say. So, he is getting the head coaching interview, so you never know. I mean, he was technically in charge of a very good defense the last couple of years. But, yeah, I wouldn't, and Zimmer's still the guy calling the shots on the defense. And I think that's the defense is still in very good hands with him.
Okay. You can never have too many corners. You heard it here.
Hey, I heard it from Mike Zimmer first.
Well, I've always said me and Mike Zimmer, we're one in the
same.
There
you
go. In more ways than one. Eric, I appreciate it. Is there anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Nope. Just check out for all the sudden off-season articles I'll be writing at dailynorseman.com, and you can always follow along with the snark and the fun at Eric_J_Thompson on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Do all those things. I do those things, and I'm excited to see which cornerback the Minnesota Vikings take in the first round next year, and then get that special shout out from Rick Spielman, as I expect he will do. Like, so that is cool.
All right.
Dare to dream, Eric. You got to dream big. Eric, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chase.
And that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I just want to remind you guys, if you like today's episode and you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, I would really appreciate if you could take a second, leave the show a 5-star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple Podcast listener, remember you can find the show on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can access all of my previous episodes and also find all my writing. I'm writing there fairly often. And also follow me on Twitter at Chase_Thomas and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Thank you for your support, and we will be back with another episode very soon. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast, hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.